Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of our Finals Countdown series, which is brought to you as always by MedTalks. We'd just like to say thank you so much for listening to all of our previous episodes. We do really appreciate the support, and we would always love your feedback. And you can feel free to message us on our Instagram platform, which is medtalks.uk. You can email us at hellomedtalks@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of our episodes and if you have any questions. And also, if you recommend any future topics, then please do get in touch. Now, we are in the endocrinology section of our finals countdown series. And in the last few episodes, we've been looking all things diabetes. So what have we talked about? Well, we've gone through type 1 and type 2 diabetes. We've looked at some of the acute complications such as diabetic ketoacidosis and the hyperosmolar hyperglycemic state. In today's episode, we will be talking all about the chronic complications that can occur with diabetes and looking all into the monitoring and how we can try and prevent these complications from occurring, and if they do occur, how they can be controlled. But before we get on to talk about that, I'd just like to mention the sponsors of this episode. And this episode is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. And that's help as in H-E-L-P. And guys, for all of you listeners who are medical students and are feeling stressed with revision and upcoming exams, sometimes this can get quite overwhelming, and we have all been there. If you feel like things are getting a bit much for you, then BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You can talk to a therapist in a completely private and online environment at your own convenience. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to help that may not be available in your area. And all you have to do is just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then they can get you matched with the therapist in just under 48 hours. After this, you then schedule a secure video and phone session. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages, and everything you share is absolutely and completely confidential. You can also request a new therapist at no additional charge anytime. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And just to make things even better, there is a special offer to all of you MedTalks listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp by entering the URL betterhelp.com/medtalks. That's betterhelp.com/medtalks. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. So now let's get into the episode, and we're going to be talking all about complications of diabetes. In simple terms, these complications can be split into microvascular complications and macrovascular complications. So, if diabetes is not controlled properly, then it can result in small vessel disease or microvascular disease, which will then affect the kidneys, nerves, and retinas, and also other systems. But the ones that we most focus on are the kidneys, nerves, and retinas. So let's start with the eyes. Diabetic retinopathy is one of the major eye-related disorders that can occur in patients with diabetes, and particularly with patients who have uncontrolled diabetes. Over 95% of patients will have detectable changes in their eyes after about 20 years. Other disorders which are associated with diabetes are cataracts and ocular palsies. If there is persistent damage to the retina because of the high glucose levels within the blood, this can lead to ischemic areas, and this can then lead to the release of factors such as angiogenic factors, for example, vascular endothelial growth factor or VEGF. VEGF then promotes the new formation of vessels, and these vessels are actually very friable and weak, which can lead to things like hemorrhage within the eyes, so vitreous hemorrhage, fibrosis, and also retinal detachments. We have different classification systems to allow us to classify the severity of the diabetic retinopathy, but the ones we use in the UK is the NSC UK classification, and the NSC UK stands for National Screening Committee UK. So, what do we have? We have non-proliferative, where there's two types. There's background diabetic retinopathy, where you get dot and blot hemorrhages. There's hard exudates and cotton wool spots. The hard exudates are composed of lipid and proteinaceous material, such as fibrinogen and albumin, that leak from the impaired blood retinal barrier. And these are actually also seen in hypertensive retinopathy. Spots are common retinal manifestations of many diseases, not just diabetes, but also hypertension, immunodeficiency syndrome. Now, clinically, they look as whitish, fluffy patches on the retina, and they're thought to occur secondary to ischemia from the retinal arteriole obstruction, and they represent nerve fiber layer infarct and precapillary arteriolar occlusion. Pre-proliferative, non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, where there are intra-retinal microvascular abnormalities. And then we have proliferative diabetic retinopathy, where there are new vessels at the disc and elsewhere, so that's NVD and NVE. This is because of the VEGF factor that I mentioned before. There's fibrosis, and we can get some retinal detachment. And then there's diabetic maculopathy, where there are exudates, there's edema, and there's new vessels elsewhere. So diabetic maculopathy is also known as diabetic macular edema, where the blood vessels in the part of the eye called the macula, which is the center of our retinas at the back of our eyes, and this part's responsible for seeing fine details in central vision. Blood vessels that enlarge to compensate for the blocked blood vessels then become leaky, and this leaked fluid builds up in the macula, causing swelling. And at first, patients may not notice any changes to their vision, but over time, they develop poor central vision and become unable to read or drive. But the vision to the side usually remains normal. How do we try and prevent this from happening? Well, good glycemic control is essential. Regular screening to assess for any early changes. This is key to preventing and managing disease. The way we manage proliferative disease is photocoagulation, and this basically burns holes within the ischemic retina to prevent the release of these angiogenesis factors such as VEGF, which goes on to stimulate the new vessels formation. However, these new vessels are weak and friable. Now we're going to move down the body to the kidneys and look at diabetic nephropathy. This typically develops about 15 to 25 years after the onset of diabetes, and if it's not controlled properly, it can progress to end-stage renal disease. The earliest sign of diabetic nephropathy is the presence of microalbuminuria, which can be assessed with an albumin creatinine ratio, or ACR. So microalbuminuria essentially means that the level of albumin, which is a protein in our blood, the level of albumin in our urine is slightly higher than it should be. Kidneys filter albumin, so if albumin is found in the urine, then this is a marker of kidney disease. And so microalbuminuria essentially tells us that the kidney is leaking small amounts of albumin into the urine, and it tells us that there's an abnormally high permeability for albumin within the glomerulus of the kidney due to the damage of the high blood glucose levels. And the best way of detecting for microalbuminuria is using the albumin to creatinine ratio, or ACR. This is the preferred test for the detection of small amounts of albumin in our urine. So the albumin creatinine ratio less than 3 mg per millimole is normal or mild increase. 3 to 30 mg per millimole moderately increased. More than 30 mg per millimole is severely increased. So microalbuminuria, why is it important? Well, it's a marker of systemic microvascular damage. Patients who have microalbuminuria should be started on an ACE inhibitor such as ramipril, even if their blood pressure is normal. What you all are asking, why start somebody on a blood pressure lowering medication if they have normal blood pressure? Well, the reason is that ACE inhibitors such as ramipril are known to prevent the progression of microalbuminuria, and they slow down the rate of progression of diabetic nephropathy and can be nephroprotective. Chronic kidney disease, or CKD in diabetes, is evidenced by a persistently low eGFR less than 60 millimoles per litre and or an albumin creatinine ratio persistently above 3 milligrams per millimole per litre. So that's diabetic nephropathy. Now let's move to diabetic neuropathy. Now this is an umbrella term for a number of conditions that can result from glucose-related damage to nerves or neurons of the somatic and the autonomic nervous systems. And there are different types of diabetic neuropathy. The main types are the following. So we get symmetrical polyneuropathy, which is typically a peripheral neuropathy that occurs in the leg, secondary to loss of vibration, pain, and temperature sensation. We also get a mononeuropathy. So this is damage to a single nerve. So that's a single cranial nerve or a peripheral nerve. For example, third nerve palsy. We get something called diabetic amyotrophy, which is a spectrum of disease that affects the lumbosacral plexus, which leads to symmetrical pain, weakness, and wasting in the proximal muscles of the leg. And then the other main type is autonomic neuropathy, which is a spectrum of conditions leading to damage of the autonomic nervous system, which can affect multiple systems. And symptoms of autonomic neuropathy secondary to diabetes will depend on which nerves are damaged. So they may include dizziness and fainting when standing. And this is because of a sudden drop in blood pressure. That's postural hypotension. May also include urinary problems, so difficulty initiating urination, a loss of bladder control, a difficulty in sensing a full bladder, and the inability to completely empty the bladder. Sexual difficulties, so men may have ejaculation problems, erectile dysfunction. Women, they may have vaginal dryness and a loss of libido. People may also have difficulty digesting food, for example, early satiety, so feeling full after a few bites of food, a loss of appetite. They may have diarrhea and constipation and abdominal bloating. And this is all because of changes in digestive function as a result of the autonomic neuropathy. Patients may have an inability to recognize hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar, because the warning signals that heavily involve the nerves are no longer working properly. People may have sweat problems, so they may sweat too much or too little. And this is because the body is no longer able to properly regulate the body temperature. Pupils can be affected, so they may have sluggish pupil reactions, which makes it difficult to adjust from the light to the dark, and also seeing well when driving at night. And patients may have an exercise intolerance. This may occur if the heart rate stays the same instead of adjusting to the activity level. Another important complication to talk about is the diabetic foot. Now, diabetic foot problems refer to a number of different conditions or pathologies that are secondary to the combination of peripheral neuropathy and poor vascular supply to the feet. So that's both a nerve damage and also blood vessel damage. So because of loss of sensation and poor blood supply, patients are at risk of a number of complications, which may include diabetic ulcers, developing secondary infections such as cellulitis and osteomyelitis, so that's infection within the bone, skin necrosis, and some patients may actually need amputation. Another well-known problem is the Charcot's joint, and this is a complex neuropathic arthropathy which results from a loss of sensation and subsequent repeated microtrauma to the foot. Typically, it's the midfoot. Microtrauma in the presence of poor peripheral blood flow can lead to remodeling, swelling, and distortion of the whole joint. It's estimated that about 10 to 15% of diabetic patients will develop a foot ulcer during their illness, and approximately 50% of diabetic hospital admissions are related to diabetic ulcers and foot problems. The management of diabetic foot pathology is essential to help recognize and treat complications early. And now in hospitals, we have diabetic foot teams who will help manage these patients with diabetic foot problems. Okay, so now let's move on to the macrovascular complications. Now, diabetes is a big risk factor for the development of atherosclerosis and other related macrovascular complications such as hypertension, cardiovascular issues such as angina, myocardial infarctions, and also neurovascular issues such as developing a stroke. Now, we need to optimize cardiovascular risk factors on an annual basis, because this is essential to preventing any premature cardiovascular disease. And this will involve modifying the typical risk factors, so smoking cessation, nutritional support and regular exercise, consideration of any anti-lipid therapy such as statins, and making sure blood pressure is well controlled with ACE inhibitors or calcium channel blockers or whichever other medication is appropriate for that patient. To conclude this talk, guys, diabetes is a systemic condition. Now, it's associated with a number of complications that can significantly impact morbidity and mortality. Patients need to be regularly reviewed, and the complications need to be assessed on at least an annual basis. During each clinical review, patients should have their BMI checked, their smoking status should be clarified, and any psychosocial issues should be assessed, such as anxiety and depression. Every 3 to 6 months, patients should have their HbA1c checked, and this should be managed accordingly. On an annual basis, patients should be screened for the major complications of diabetes. So that's retinopathy. They should have an annual retinal screening and eye check. Nephropathy, so checking renal function and checking the albumin-creatinine ratio. Neuropathy and diabetic foot, so assessment for peripheral neuropathy, autonomic neuropathy, a full examination including checking footwear, monofilament assessment of neuropathy, a vascular assessment plus minus any ultrasound Doppler scans. and cardiovascular risk factors, so a primary and secondary prevention strategy through optimization of blood pressure and lipids. Just a couple of other things to talk about. For type 1 diabetics, we have the Dose Adjustment for Normal Eating program, the DAFNI program. This is to provide type 1 diabetic patients with a way of calculating the amount of carbohydrate they're getting in each meal, which then helps them to adjust their insulin accordingly. And this is essentially education. Education is so important in managing patients who have diabetes, particularly the type 1 diabetics, who are often very young and are faced with this huge lifelong condition that they have to now manage themselves. And empowering these patients will definitely lead to better management and improved outcomes. The final thing to mention are the sick day rules. And it's imperative that patients who have diabetes, whether that's type 1 or type 2, understand what they should do if they have an intercurrent illness to prevent their poor glycemic control and potentially prevent any life-threatening diabetic emergencies such as ketoacidosis. Sick day rules refers to a number of recommendations in type 1 diabetes mellitus with an intercurrent illness. And the advice includes to continue insulin therapy. Alterations may be required, but you need to seek advice from a specialist, whether that's a clinician or a nurse. Any specialist will do. Increasing the frequency of blood glucose monitoring, considering checking ketones to look out for any of the acute complications like DKA, ensuring that patients are well hydrated and having a normal meal pattern, and meals can be replaced by carbohydrate-based drinks, and seeking urgent medical attention if a patient's unable to tolerate oral intake, they are drowsy, or they have sustained vomiting, then it's imperative to seek medical advice. So if you do know any people that have type diabetes, or you have diabetes yourself, then I hope this talk has been useful. But generally, it's all useful for our revision, for our learning about the condition, and for life beyond as doctors. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Again, I hope you found this talk informative. Please remember to share with your friends, your peers, and anyone else who may find them useful. We love bringing you all of this revision content, and we hope that they are helping you with your exams and generally your general knowledge as medical students and future doctors. So, again, feel free to leave us with your feedback. You can message us and ask us any questions you'd like. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to know your thoughts. Thanks very much for listening, and we look forward to bringing you more content. That wraps up our diabetes series, but we're moving on to looking at other types of endocrinological conditions. Wow, that was a mouthful. In the next episodes. So stay tuned. All the best, guys. Goodbye.